get ready to blast off into the incredible world of brain-computer interfaces. NeuroCareers, doing the impossible, is taking you on a journey to meet the fearless pioneers pushing the boundaries of what's possible. In this special series, we'll be shining a spotlight on the nominees and winners of the International BCI Award, one of the biggest and most prestigious awards in the BCI world. You'll hear from BCI professionals as they share their revolutionary work and get a behind-the-scenes sneak peek at what it takes to be a winner. So, buckle up, grab a snack, and get ready to be amazed as we explore the impossible becoming a reality in the world of BCIs. But before we blast off, I want to give a big thanks to the co-host of this BCI Award edition on our podcast, Dr. Christoph Guger, and GTEC Medical Engineering. When I was a faculty member at the University of Cincinnati and Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, my team and I did some pretty amazing stuff for patients needing epilepsy surgery. We would put special sensors, also called grids, directly on their brain to prepare for surgery and create maps of their brain in a much faster and safer way than is usually done. It's called high gamma mapping, and it lets us figure out in just a few minutes the essential parts of the brain that need to be spared during surgery. Can you imagine? You can create a map of language, motor, and even mass processing in no time. It was the first time this innovative technology was used at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. When I moved to Florida, I established the first functional brain mapping and BCI program at Florida Hospital. I continue to use high gamma mapping to help epilepsy patients avoid losing their ability to speak or move after surgery. But even cooler than that, I created brain-computer interface studies that let patients control things with their brain in real time. Our patients could even spell words with incredible speed by just using their brains. No hands involved. I also discovered that brain-computer interfaces could help patients move their chronically impaired hands or legs years after a stroke when not much else could help them. So, I started working with the faculty from Advent Health University to help these patients restore their ability to use their hands. I received special training for it, and it's still mind-blowing how cool it is. My favorite part of what I do is teaching. At my established Institute of Neuro Approaches, I've integrated all my experience and knowledge into a unique course on brain-computer interfaces. With graduate neurobiology students, we started with theory, and then I gave them the BCI equipment so they could have hands-on experience working with BCIs. It significantly improved the way students learn, and they absolutely love this practical part of learning how to use neurotechnology. And all of this was made possible thanks to GTEC's awesome brain-computer interface technology. They have everything from high-tech up to 1,024-channel EEG systems to wearables, tools for neurorehabilitation, such as the medical-grade system Recoverix, and educational kits with unicorn hybrid block for learning how to work with BCI technology. But the most important part is their support and care. I have enjoyed working and collaborating with Dr. Christoph Guger and GTEC employees for over 15 years, and I hope for many more successful years ahead. So, if you are interested in GTEC's brain-computer interfaces and neurotechnologies, check out their website at gtech.at. It's worth it. And keep in mind, I do not receive any financial support from GTEC and share my honest opinion, supported by many years of experience working with their equipment. Dear NeuroCareers podcast listeners, welcome to the first episode of our BCI Award NeuroCareers podcast series, where we explore the exciting and rapidly growing field of neurotechnologies and its various applications in the modern world. Today, we have a very special treat for you as we dive into the fascinating world of brain-computer interface technology and the prestigious International BCI Award. Joining us on this episode are some of the most distinguished BCI experts and members of the BCI Award Foundation, including Dr. Christoph Guger, Dr. Dean Krushensky, Dr. Tomasz Rutkowski, and Dr. Brandon Allison. These brilliant minds have dedicated their careers to advancing the field of BCI technology, and they are here to share their insights, experiences, and perspectives with us. Together, we will explore the history and significance of the International BCI Award, its impact on the field of neuroscience, and exciting developments in BCI technology that have earned its winners this coveted recognition. So, sit back, relax, and get ready to embark on a thrilling journey into the cutting-edge world of brain-computer interface technology with our esteemed guests. This is the NeuroCareers podcast series for the International BCI Award, and we're thrilled to have you along for the ride. So, dear podcast guests, I am very happy to see you here today on our podcast, and I would like to ask you to briefly introduce yourself. Tell where you are joining us from, because I know that you are joining us from different parts of the world, and maybe you can say something interesting about the institution you are working at, so that our listeners would be able to learn more about the institutions across the world that are actually doing BCI research. So maybe we will start with Dr. Christoph Guger. Dr. Guger, can you make the introduction?
Sure. Hi, Milena. Thank you very much for the introduction. So I'm coming from a company based in Austria called GTEC Medical Engineering. We started about 25 years ago with brain-computer interface systems. So I developed some BCI technology during my master thesis and PhD in Gerd Pfurtscheller's lab. This is the person who came up with the event-related desynchronization principle. And then I showed the first real-time brain-computer interface at the BCI meeting in Rensselaerville. And people during the meeting, during the conference, were asking me if I would also sell the brain-computer interface. So I established GTEC, and then I sold the first system to University of Cambridge. And the second system went actually to a university in South Korea. And this is how brain-computer interface technology started at GTEC. And about 13 years ago, we established the BCI Award to select the best BCI research projects all over the world. And this is actually getting bigger and bigger every single year. And yeah, this is actually how I came into this BCI research.
Yeah, thank you so much for your introduction, Dr. Guger. And I tell your story to all my students, so to encourage them to pursue the career and do something really amazing in this field. How during your PhD thesis, you are actually created the device that you were able to sell, and then you started the company, and it really became very, very successful. So thank you for mentioning the story. I think it's, yeah.
And then in Rensselaerville, at the conference, actually, I met also Brenton Ellison, and he was already coming with a big smile to me and was saying, "I was reading all your publications." And from since then, we are friends. So Brenton, maybe you're the next one introducing you.
Yeah, so Dr. Brenton Ellison, please introduce yourself.
Okay, well, thank you for the opportunity to join you in this podcast. My name is Brenton Ellison. My degree is from UC San Diego in cognitive science and neuroscience. What Christoph said is true. We met at the 1999 BCI meeting in Rensselaerville, and we hit it off very, very early. I was a big fan of his work, and ever since then, we've been friends. I'm happy to do this with him. It's a similar situation with Dean. We've been to a lot of conferences together, been friends for quite a long time. Tomasz, I first knew initially, in fact, through the BCI Awards. So that was a good story. I mean, I knew of his work, but I hadn't really seen him or interacted with him. And so one year I was the MC of the BCI Awards ceremony. And of course, I knew who was going to win, but nobody in the audience knew at that time. And after that, Tomek and I went out and had a good time in the lovely city of Graz. And so this is also a nice transition to talk a little bit about my role with the awards and how helpful they have been, not only for the BCI community, but for me personally. So I've been involved with the awards for several years. We've produced the series of books and a lot of other activities. I think it's been good for all of us who have been involved and also been very helpful for students. So we've had hundreds of thousands of downloads or purchases or reads of various components of the BCI Award, and we look forward to many more, including our contribution here with this podcast and a book we're developing now with Melina.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ellison. And you mentioned Dr. Tomasz Rutkowski. Dr. Rutkowski, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. Hello. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Melina, for the invitation. And yes, I was lucky to be a winner, and then I was a judge, and now I am a member of the BCI Foundation. So it's really kind of, I make a full circle. So I am originally from Poland. I did my PhD in Poland in telecommunications and acoustics, but then I moved to the signal processing. I moved to Japan 20 years ago. And the beginning, there was Riken Brain Science Institute. So I believe we were one of the very first customers of the GTEC and the beautiful amplifiers. Then I moved from different locations, but now I am the Riken AIP. So this is a different center in this huge, beautiful Japanese institute. And we are focusing on AI machine learning application. And in our laboratory, we try to apply it for the brain-computer interfacing. And mostly we focus these days on the so-called passive BCI, when we try to use BCI approaches to the dementia and the healthy aging support.
Thank you very much. And our last participant, but not least, very important participant, Dr. Dean Krushensky. Dean, can you please introduce yourself?
Sure, yes. I'm a professor of biomedical engineering at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. So Richmond is infamous for being the capital of the Confederacy. My PhD is in electrical engineering from Penn State, and I did a postdoc in John Wolpaw's lab at the Wadsworth Center, the New York State Department of Health. And ever since then, I've been working on BCI. We work on both invasive and non-invasive BCIs.
Thank you so much. And maybe each of you can share the most important BCI project that you are proud of in your BCI career.
I can start with a nice story about Dean Krushensky. So everybody knows the P300 speller. Many, many labs tried to get it working, and they showed at the beginning, 1, 2, 3, 4 icons on the screen. And the performance and the accuracy was never really good. And then Dean came in the Wolpaw lab together with Eric Sellers, and they implemented the P300 speller in BCI in 2000. And they put a lot of icons on the screen. And they just implemented it very smartly, and suddenly it worked perfectly. So Dean actually is the programmer who made the first P300 speller working with very high performance. So very well done, Dean.
Thank you. And I like your approach talking about each other project. So it also shows how important they are and also how you are familiar with each other project. So who would like to talk next? Dr. Krushensky.
I spent my early career in BCI focusing on the P300 and P300 Speller with Eric Sellers. And I was also working on sensory motor rhythms, again, in John Wolpaw's lab. And somewhat inspired by Gerv Schalk, we started to move to intracranial BCIs. And I'd say that was around 2007, 2008. And we've also been working on intracranial BCIs since then. And one of our longest running projects is decoding and synthesizing speech from intracranial brain activity, which we're currently working on. And I can maybe make some comments later because it seems to be a common theme and the BCI award in recent years.
Yeah, thank you so much. Dr. Allison?
Yes, I just had a follow-up on that story that works with Dean's story as well. So probably the proudest thing I've ever accomplished is when Christoph and I were in Wisconsin, we were meeting with some colleagues for some work relating to stroke rehabilitation. And we all were out at a local pub. And for the first time, Christoph drank a beer. And so that is the proudest thing ever, is that I assisted Christoph in that. In my entire career, I've never done anything remotely that important.
Thank you, Dr. Allison. Dr. Rutkowski.
Yeah, so maybe if I can follow with this P300 story, this would be like, you know, my contribution. The proudest of this was my student project, which actually won the BCI Award 2014. And this was a beautiful, for me, huge surprise. I think most of you who were in the room, I was so shocked that we won that I couldn't even speak. But this was very nice collaboration because two students from the physics department, University of Tokyo, and my student, University of Tsukuba at that time, they started talking together and they combined a beautiful tactile. This is like ultrasonic, non-touch, but touch tactile device, which basically used the beamforming to form the beam, which is like, you know, touching the skin. So it's very nice, actually, application, very sterile if you want to do it in the hospital. And the students combined this together. This was a very nice tactile BCI, which finally won. So kind of nicely bringing students together, kind of they were very much like, you know, motivated because award was very nice. This is $3,000, a very good price for the students. And that's brought everything together, like, you know, to make it happen. So kind of very proud story as a professor and also contributor to the BCI Award.
Of course. And congratulations from me on that award, especially.
It's been almost 10 years ago already.
Yes, I understand. But I also feel always so proud when students are accomplishing these amazing things. And that's why it's so good to have this possibility to apply for this award. So thank you very much. And also, can each of you tell about the biggest challenge in your work in BCIs, in neurotechnologies, and how did you overcome it? Dr. Guger?
Sure. There are many challenges, of course, but one, which is a very nice one. So I started in Gerd Furtula's lab, and everything was about motor imagery, left-hand movement, right-hand movement, foot movement. And of course, we tested it with many, many students in the lab. Students are very young, and they achieved a certain classification accuracy, mostly around 80%. We had also one student who achieved 100% in the first experiment ever. So at this time, I used common spatial patterns. This was actually 1998. And this was actually the first experiment where ever one person achieved 100% accuracy. But on average, students performed with like 80%. And then we started our work with stroke patients, with Recoverix, where we can treat upper and lower limb functions of these patients. And we were at the beginning very concerned that the performance will be much worse than with students because, you know, they're suffering, they have some illness, they have concentration problems. And then we recorded the first data, and surprisingly, they were much better than our students. Nowadays that we know, on average, our stroke patients have a classification accuracy of about 90%, so 10% better than students. And This is because of the high motivation that stroke patients have to get better. So if you're running these experiments with students that don't have that much interest to do it as good as possible, but stroke patients really have motivation. They imagine, for example, the foot movement. We stimulate the foot and suddenly the foot moves after it was paralyzed for a couple of years. And this leads to a lot of motivation and this high performance when they are using BCI systems. This is just something that we didn't expect before we started with stroke patients. We just thought they will be much worse than students.
Yeah, thank you so much for mentioning that. And this was something I really witnessed myself when I visited your GTEC facilities and had possibility to work with some of the patients. And I saw how motivated they are to really perform to their very best when they are using the recovery system. So that was an amazing experience and very inspiring. So thank you. Dr. Krushensky.
Yeah, more of a current challenge, again, facing speech decoding and synthesis from brain activity, specifically intracranial brain activity. It's been a challenge. So we and others have demonstrated that you can successfully decode and synthesize speech from intracranial activity. But when the way that those models are built, they're generally using previously recorded speech. Now, for a BCI to help someone that's disabled, we would need to use attempted or imagined speech. And the models from actual speech do not translate well to imagined speech. So again, it's still a current challenge in the field, but one of my PhD students, Pedram Zanganesarush, recently published a paper in NeuroImage that provides some insights on how the neural activity differs between imagined and over speaking. So I would say we're not near solving the problem, but we're making incremental progress on that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Krushensky. Dr. Rotkovsky.
So maybe I could share this story now, So basically, as I said before, we try to use now passive BCI. So basically use BCI as a technology for the neurobiomarker for kind of like judging the brain activity of the healthy aging versus dementia. And always there is this issue, we dream to make those experiments at home, and even pandemic now is forcing us to do it at home because we cannot bring our elderly subject to laboratory. There was always idea to use dry electrodes, and many dry electrodes are really noisy, So we had a different variables, and I think now finally we kind of ended up with this G-Unicorn. So basically this new, nice dry electrode device, which we already learned our elderly subjects are able to put themselves at home, there is only two electrodes to stack. So basically we are kind of balancing between doing deeper science and very practical applications, which one day we want to do. My dream is that one day elderly people could measure brain activity as they measure these days, heart, blood pressure. Those are simple devices that everybody can use at home. So maybe one day neurotech will be also available at home. And those people can improve their well-being, mental well-being, and stop dementia by monitoring their activities and brain.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I wish you all the best with this development of this project. It can bring a lot of value to people. Thank you. And Dr. Allison.
Well, I think one of the ways that my career is developing that I'm happy to discuss is similar to what is happening elsewhere in the BCI community. In the early days of BCI research, I was primarily focused on systems to help people with severe motor disabilities communicate, people who were otherwise unable to communicate. And 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, this was really the main thrust of the field. There weren't really a lot of applications for different types of users. But over the last several years, I've become more active in BCIs for stroke rehabilitation or BCIs for assessing mental function in persons with disorders of consciousness and some other directions where you see BCIs becoming much, much more useful in new ways for new groups of people. And not at all to say that we don't want to continue to help people with late stage ALS or other conditions, but everyone knew that the field had to become broader if it's going to eventually be practical in terms of reasonably priced devices and systems that work at home. And I think largely the expansion of target groups has been very helpful with that. And so I'm glad to have been involved with it.
Thank you very much, Dr. Allison. And the next question is, what was the most unexpected thing you learned during your career in BCIs in neurotechnology? Dr. Guger, I already see you are ready to speak.
Yeah, there was a very nice winner, Frank Willett from Stanford University and Brown University 2 years ago. And Frank used implants to decode motor movements. And for many, many years, people tried to communicate with brain-computer interfaces, and they used strategies like left-hand movement, right-hand movement, or the P300 speller, or steady-state visual evoke potentials to select single characters. And Frank had the fascinating idea to decode handwriting patterns. So people were writing an A like they were doing it by hand. And suddenly he got a much higher communication rate than anybody before, because the complexity of the handwriting pattern is much higher than just simple motor movement imagination of the left or right hand. And that's the reason why he scored so high in the BCI award and outperformed all the other projects and was winning 2 years ago. So this was really a surprise and a completely new idea that Frank had. And it's just very nice that he got the award.
Thank you, Dr. Guger. Dr. Krushensky?
Yes, I'm not going to refer to anything specific. We have many results that I think are interesting, but one of the things that continues to surprise me, so I did my PhD in electrical engineering, but it was not related to BCI or bio signal processing at all. And when I first started my postdoc, I was just quite surprised how complex and variable electrophysiological measurements from the brain are. It continues to surprise and fascinate me to this day. Just being able to extract information that's stable over time and that people can learn to use to control. It's an ongoing challenge in the field. That's one thing that continues to fascinate and to some extent surprise me, how many levels of depth and complexity there are in brain activity.
Yeah, it's like a language of our brain, yes, that we're trying to decipher. And I think Dr. Shark also starts his presentations with that complexity and brain activity as a language of our brain. That's beautiful. Dr. Rutkowski?
Yes, so maybe if I can follow up Dean's story. For me, it was the most actually shocking, fascinating that actually we can learn to modulate our brain activity. So at the beginning of my BCI, stories, when I was in Dr. Cichocki's laboratory in Riken, he was my PhD advisor also, I was really lousy P300, subject. I couldn't generate P300, it was really bad. And then I learned over time, you can really learn to modulate those brain waves, So later on in our laboratory with students, they were sometimes calling me Dr. P300 because I was generating the best P300s in the laboratory. So testing different our new approaches, auditory, tactile, visual, and so on, I was always the test subject because my P300 was so good. It's really showing plasticity is a power and how much we can actually use BCI for neurofeedback and so on, because we can really change our brains, so it's really fascinating technology. And I'm an example of that. I'm really good P300 on subject now.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because when I was just starting to learn about P300, it was many years ago, I saw some statistics that there is a certain percentage of people, I think 3%, they were mentioning, who don't generate P300. So they're absolutely healthy, normal people, but they don't have P300. Did you witness anything like that? Or maybe you saw that, yes, it happens, but it also can be modulated.
Yeah, I think you can learn. So from my example, I don't have the data, but I remember I was really zero accuracy at the beginning. And you can really learn, you can really see, I average my P300, I can see it's there in the wave. So you can learn, I think it's kind of playing with attention, being more focused and so on. I think that quite many things coming together, but basically plasticity, brain plasticity kicks in. And that's the power, the power of BCI.
Yeah, thanks so much. Dr. Allison?
First, I have a quick follow-up on what Tomek was just saying, which is that when I was working for John Polich, who was a very well-known expert in P300s, I asked him that question. I said, you know, what have you noticed about people who don't seem to have a P300? And he said nothing. He said, we've looked at it over and over. There's no indication that having a small P300 means that they're anything in particular. And so this is actually an ongoing mystery, is what does it mean? Is there any meaningful correlation with other things? Another comment about the, what's happening in the field is, of course, you see a big transition from BCIs being a relatively obscure research field, where we mentioned the first BCI meeting earlier in Rensselaerville in 1999, and you have on the scale of a few dozen people, to now, you know, conferences before COVID, we're pulling in several hundred researchers. So this is a big transition. Simultaneously, or somewhat, you have these so-called big BCI efforts from Facebook and Neuralink, which do succeed in getting a lot of publicity. So their goals were to get a lot of publicity and to have major breakthroughs in BCI. And after several years, we see that they have succeeded in one of those goals.
Thank you very much, Dr. Allison. And next question is, what innovations in neurotechnologies are inspiring you in your work? Dr. Guger?
So I'm speaking about the winner and nominee again. So there's a company from Australia. They were a spin-off from University of Melbourne. So I'm talking about Synchron. And they submitted actually 2016 the first time their stent rod. So that's a tiny electrode that's inserted into blood vessels, in contrast to all the other electrodes that we are putting on the scalp or onto this cortex, where we also have deep electrodes that are inserted into the cortex. But they changed the procedure completely and just developed this small stent rod, so you're opening the blood vessel and then you can put it into certain locations of the cortex. And with these electrodes, they're also able to record cortical potentials. And at the moment, the first clinical tests are going on in the US for spelling and communication with such an interface. And they were actually nominated 2016. And they were just submitting the electrode itself at this time. I remember still the submission because it was so distinct from all the other technology that we have seen up to date. And 2021, they were actually winning the BCI award. So it took them like 5 years to refine the technology. And this also shows how new neurotechnology is. So it takes a couple of years to figure out how it's correctly done. And now it looks very promising. And that's also another very nice project that was submitted to the BCI award, and I'm very happy that now a company is successful with this procedure.
Yeah, thank you so much for mentioning that. And I want to let our listeners know that we are looking forward to recording the whole podcast with this BCI award winners, and our listeners will be able to hear everything about the stent rod and its development. So thank you, Dr. Guger. Dr. Krushensky?
Yes, building on what Christoph mentioned, so I do think that Synchron is one of the most unique and potentially promising technologies. I'm really interested to see what's going to come of the clinical trials. But related to that, any higher density intracranial recording, so that's what we need to move the field forward. Also from a signal processing standpoint, right now we're a bit limited, at least in the work that I do and many others, to clinical recordings, which are quite sparse. So the higher density we can get, the better. So I'm not going to name any specific technologies, but I know there's a lot of groups working on higher density electrode arrays. So I'm looking forward to what develops with that. I'm hoping that either they can be implemented clinically or for research purposes in clinical patients.
Thank you, Dr. Krushensky. Dr. Rutkowski? Yep, thank you.
Yes, I would also build on this, my previous speakers. So basically, most of our material is in the hardware development. And I think this stent rod is fascinating. Like, I used to teach about this electrodes after the first submission at my lectures. And last year, I was fascinated that they submitted again. I was that time chair of this BCI award, so I could help to promote them also. So this is really fascinating. And for me, really, development on the hardware side, again, is the most interesting now. For those high-density electrodes these days, dry electrodes, as I told you before, I want people to use EEG at home. So basically, hardware still must be developed. Then on the machine learning side, I think we can very quickly jump in with new, like, you know, methods, but we still need a little bit better hardware, like, you know, and wearables, I think, so kind of easy, like, you know, the kind of implantable electrodes. This everything goes for the blood vessels. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Rutkowski and Dr. Addison.
Well, one of the challenges in being in a podcast with such experts is that they have already really nailed some big points. So I agree, of course, with what was said about the Stentrode. I wanted to follow up and expand on what Tomek just said about BCI at home and BCI being practical for more users. This is a big degree of innovation that is often underappreciated outside of the field, but is very well known in the field. The second BCI meeting, the theme was out of the frying pan. It was basically about real-world challenges of translation from laboratories to home settings. And this is still a big deal. So as far as what it has inspired me, I'd say a lot of that work, for example, all of us are friends with and very much respect Teresa Vaughn. And she's really done a lot of work to make BCIs more practical at home. The phrase that she uses is long-term independent home use. And this is still a big challenge with patients. It's great to get something that works in the lab, but look at the different words. Long-term, well, no, it's just something that works temporarily. Independent, no, you have everyone in the lab to help you. Home use, no, you're in a lab. And so I'm inspired by and enthusiastic about ongoing innovations to make BCIs more practical in homes for long-term independent use.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Addison. And you all mentioned the project with Stentrode, which is absolutely amazing and very innovative. But you were able to witness many projects throughout those years. So what were maybe some other projects that made the biggest impression on you through all those years and why? Dr. Krushensky?
As I mentioned earlier, we've had a long-running project on speech decoding and synthesis, and Christian Herf is now at the University of Maastricht. While he was in Tanya Schultz's lab at the University of Bremen, submitted a project on speech BCI that won third place in the 2018 award. I mentioned earlier, ever since 2017, there's always been in the top three finishers a speech BCI project, with one exception in 2020, it wasn't a speech BCI, but it was the handwriting, cranial handwriting BCI from Krishna Shenoy's group. Unfortunately, Krishna passed away a few weeks ago, and that's going to be a huge loss to the field. But I'm continually inspired and excited that speech decoding continues to be a theme, and I'm hoping that we still get so many strong submissions in the future related to speech BCI.
Thank you very much, Dr. Krushensky. Dr. Gugger?
So I like the project a lot from KAIST in South Korea along Hyeongsun Park. That's a mechanical engineering lab, and they do a lot of work with robotics. And they had an interest to decode single finger movements with non-invasive BCI technology. And there's early work from Kai Miller, for example, and Gerwin Schalk, who showed with ECOG CREZO, the sensory motor cortex, that people are able to decode single finger movements from each other. But it was always impossible with EEG electrodes because the spatial resolution is just not big enough. And KAIST was using the Bengolin system. This is this 1024 channel EEG system with little polygons that you can put onto the shaved head. The distance from the electrodes is only 8 millimeters, and also the radius of the electrodes is very small, much smaller with standard EEG electrodes. And with this setup, they were actually able in this publication that came out last year to decode single finger movements with non-invasive EEG data. And this is just a very important step forward, because then you don't have to implant anymore the technology, and it just gives you much higher spatial resolution. So especially for robotics, but also for medical application, that's a very important step. And now there are a lot of research projects also already ongoing with this high resolution EEG device.
Thank you so much. I just want to emphasize to our listeners who don't know about this new possibility to record the brain data with Pangolin that it's very high resolution recording. At the same time, it requires for people to shave their hair. Dr. Guger, do you know how willing are people to do this, to make the recordings happen?
Yeah, there's one very nice trick that the guys in South Korea used. They just used monks for doing the recordings because they anyhow shaved. So in this case, it was very easy. But also for patients, you know, it's very attractive because the alternative is to get an implant. So if you can avoid that by shaving parts of your head, this is much better than having a neurosurgery with the implant. And also for scientific studies, it's attractive because you can, you know, shave somebody and then on a couple of days you can do just many, many experiments. And the data that you get just has a much better spatial resolution than any EEG recording before. So basically you can pick any scientific publication you like and you replicate it with more EEG channels, and then you get new results that were not known before, like the single finger decoding. Some people are using high frequency oscillation detection with non-invasive EEG. So this is old stuff that was done before only with implants.
Yeah, thank you so much. And maybe in the future, shaved heads will become a fashion and we will be able to use the technology in our everyday settings. So thank you. Dr. Rutkowski?
Yeah, sure. So maybe we already talked about this CES and TROD, this is my very favorite project, but I also like the idea that they submitted like 2016 first time, and they continue working and then they won, like, you know, so it's really showing this kind of like, you know, nice, strong path. They knew they had very good technology and this technology was finally winning. So this is kind of nice story for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was communicating with Dr. Guger, and he also wanted to emphasize that it takes time for the project to develop, which he also mentioned today. Dr. Guger, do you have anything to comment on this to let people know how important is to persevere and also to make submissions, which, you know, finally become winning?
Of course, it's very important to build up the team, the knowledge, and to do it for many years. So if you look at the 2022 BCI award submissions and you look at the amount of authors and institutions, it's fascinating. So altogether, we had around 150 people on these 12 nominated projects and about 50 institutions who did the work. And if you're summing out all the money spent for this research, I guess you are reaching $1 billion that was invested for these 12 nominees. And it also shows how much money and knowledge is nowadays in these projects. If we compare it with 13 years ago, you know, people could also win in small teams and with very low budget. But nowadays it takes doctors, therapists, neuroscientists, artificial intelligence, people, signal processing guys, electronic engineers, people working on nanoparticles and everything. So there are so many different fields mixed and there's so much budget in neurotechnology. It's fascinating.
Thank you, Dr. Guger. Dr. Allison.
Yes, going back to some of the earlier comments about speech decoding or music decoding, you know, as Dean was mentioning, in addition to Herf and Schultz and colleagues, Gerwin Schalk and Ty Miller and colleagues have been very influential in this. I also remember, you know, that at early conferences and papers and things, there was a common slide that John Walpaugh used to use to indicate what BCIs are not. And it was a slide with Gene Hackman holding a stethoscope to the wall, and he was trying to explain that BCIs are not like eavesdropping. You're not literally decoding what people are thinking. They're very interpretive. And I had said in some publications that this would probably be the first big Kuhnian paradigm shift in the field when there actually can be systems that work just by thinking. You think a certain word or a musical phrase or something, and that appears on the screen. And that's what's starting to happen now in terms of speech decoding and music decoding. And it's similar with handwriting decoding, where instead of, if you want to spell the word cat, for example, instead of counting flashes to get P300s or something, you just simply either think about that word or you think about writing that. This is much more literal and direct than other forms of other BCIs or even other forms of communication. So that's been also very impressive to me.
Thank you, Dr. Allison. And the next question is, maybe some of you are aware of some project that received awards that had a particularly interesting story behind them, or maybe inspirational story from where this project started and gave rise to something very special over the years after the award was received. So anything before, anything after that you might tell us about. Yeah? Dr. Rutkowski?
Yeah, so maybe again, I can talk about my student, another student who got nominated for the award in 2016. So basically, this was a very creative student like Nominaka, and he was very much looking for a new paradigm, like, you know. He didn't like P300, he didn't like imagery, BCI, and so on. He wanted something new. And he was really kind of searching, throwing away, searching, like typical creative work. And basically, he ended up at the beginning at the SSVP, which is again flashing, headaches, and so on. And then he jumped to the CVEP. So this is quite new technology when you can use kind of like an pseudo-random code. It's much more friendly. We can go for the higher frequencies. He was pushing very high. So we wanted to go like 50, 60 hertz, but we end up at the 40 hertz, which is already a very friendly CVEP. He made this in the 16 commands. It was quite nice, like 16 commands CVEP, single student project. And he got nominated for the BCI Award in 2016. So also even like, you know, we are talking that those are the big groups with big budget. But also students, if they have very nice idea and they very nicely implemented, they have also chance. And that's what this kind of story, like, you know, of a student searching for the new friendly paradigm. And he got nominated finally.
Yeah, that's a beautiful example, because I think some of the students might feel hesitant to submit their work for the award, which I felt when I was considering submissions, but it's definitely worth doing it. And I can also tell our story that I've done quite a few submissions, but it helped me to develop projects better and better and better. And eventually we've got into Dr. Allison and all groups of nominees. So that's really an encouragement for everybody to try it out and submit. So everything is possible. And I also know that Dr. Guger is considering ideas to expand the nominations for other groups, like, for example, art and neurotechnologies. So there will be even more opportunities for people to submit in different areas of neurotechnology and BCIs. So thank you so much. Dr. Allison?
Well, I guess I can add to that. So I'm also very interested in BCI and art, or BCI for creative expression. When I say interested, I don't mean so much that I have a lot of papers on the subject, but I find it a fun direction. And, you know, you have to have something beyond spelling. There are a lot of examples like playing games, but creative expression in general. You see that Christoph's background is an art project that he might mention shortly. Another inspirational direction that I enjoy is science fiction. So the term bi-fi is just the same as sci-fi, but specific to BCIs. And this is also something that's fun to see and develop. There has been a book published by another colleague and friend named Eric Luthart called Red Devil 4. And to my knowledge, this is the first time that a bi-fi work, something about BCIs, was actually produced by a BCI expert. And it very much shows in his book. If you read it, you'll say, okay, this guy really knows what he's talking about. But I should also go back to the BCI and art, because that might be a good segue for Christoph to talk about the background behind him.
Thank you so much. Dr. Guger, would you like to talk about the background? And maybe this is something related to the project and the story behind one of the projects.
Jarek Luthert is, of course, a very well-known neurosurgeon who is for many, many years in the BCI field. And he's also the person who made actually the first ECOG cursor control experiment with an epilepsy patient with Gerwin-Schalk. This was the first publication that showed that ECOG can be used for cursor control. This inspired, of course, many other people to start with that, including us, many, many other labs. And it was fascinating how quick Gerwin-Schalk and Eric could train the BCI user. So they needed more or less a couple of hours and they achieved perfect accuracy. At this time, with EEG-based brain-computer interfaces, we needed a couple of hours to achieve this performance. This showed very nicely how important neurofeedback is. So the patient improved because Gerwin was feeding back what the person was controlling. And with that, they got the BCI system working very rapidly. Before, there were a lot of experiments, you know, and they did offline data analysis, didn't work so nice. But with this real-time implementation, it worked right away. This was the Kickstarter for many research projects all around the world.
Thank you, Dr. Guger. Dr. Krushinski, do you have anything to add?
Well, I don't have any particular story. I mean, I think most of the projects, you know, the Stentro and some of the speech stuff, we've already spoken about that at length. But I can mainly just talk about how our award in 2018 really helped springboard the continued collaboration with Christian Herf and Tanya Schultz. And again, we've had funded projects, you know, from that time to the present. So the BCI award really helped solidify our collaboration for the speech decoding project.
Thank you so much. And my next question is about any suggestions that you might have for those people who are considering submissions for BCI awards. So all of you were already participating on BCI committees. You were reviewing the awards. In your opinion, what is the main thing that people should pay attention to when submitting their work to BCI award? And what makes the submission a winning submission? Dr. Guger?
So very important is, of course, that you are showing to the jury what you achieved and the scientific background and the writing of what you did must be perfect. So it's like a perfect IEEE publication nowadays, because you have to summarize everything on 2 pages. And some people are really expert for bringing the key points into 2 pages. So there's no place for blah, blah at all. You have to show why this is much cooler than anything else. And the competition is really hard nowadays. So I mentioned it before, how much budget is just in the 12 nominated projects. And this is also the reason why we introduced a few years ago the video contribution in addition to the 2 pages. So people have to send us a 1-minute video of about what they achieved. So it makes it much easier for the jury to figure out how cool it is. And if we also compared with submissions 13 years ago, then most of the submissions were offline data analysis. Nowadays, almost all the projects are real-time BCI systems, which are already working in real time. So the difficulty level is much higher than some years ago, but you have to show it in a very clear video and paper presentation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Guger. Dr. Krushinski?
Yes, building on what Christoph mentioned about how it's changed over the years. So I've only served on one jury, and that was the very first inaugural jury in 2010. I remember we actually decided the finalists during the conference where it would be announced. So the jury, we were sitting at a table in the lodge at the Civilmar conference grounds where the meeting was held for several years. We were kind of deliberating about who the winner would be. And that actually happened to be Kuntai Guan's group for a project on stroke rehab. I think we had at least 50 submissions that year, even for the inaugural award. And correct me if I'm wrong, Christoph, but we had no idea what it would go on to become. And as Christoph mentioned, it has really evolved since then. And you know, back then it was just a one-page application. And as also Christoph mentioned, one thing we were challenged with is that in that short, when I say application, I think it was more of a, you know, a paragraph description of the research. Many people didn't include any results or anything like that. So we had no idea what the actual progress or results were for the project. So that was quite a challenge. But it sounds like these days, you know, having some demonstration preliminary results, really the novelty and impact of the award is what puts people over the edge.
Thank you so much, Dr. Krushensky. Dr. Rutkowski?
Yes, so maybe I serve already on the several committees, even I was our chairman. So I would say that the application must stand out, like, you know, there must be something like, you know, catchy, like, you know. So even like, you know, my former students, we did P300, which is very popular, but they stand out with this tactile, like, you know, ultrasonic, like, you know, in this case application. So basically it's good to have kind of overview, really, what is in the field these days, and try to pick up something in your project that you want to present it. We have to remember that the juries, they have like 100 applications to review, like, you know. And again, time is very often limited. We have Zoom meetings, so they're also kind of like, you know, compressed. So basically, it's very good to have like, you know, something flashy, something interesting to present the project, like, you know, because it must go to the top 12 and later has a chance for the winning.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rutkowski and Dr. Allison.
I would agree, you know, with what has been said before. Certainly a project must stand out. My other advice for people who want to submit a BCI award that looks good with the jury is to look for two types of things in our prior books and chapters. The first thing is in the introduction chapter. Every book has an introduction chapter and a concluding chapter. And we had a lot of advice. So, you know, Christoph and I have always been editors and we would write these chapters ourselves. And so we have advice to people on how to do well. For example, one of the things that Christoph always emphasized putting in these sections, which is true, is you have to have something that scores high on multiple criteria. And so we say, this is what the judges are looking for. These are the questions that they'll be asking. And if you can score high on one or two of them, that's great, but you have to be consistently high. And then the second thing to look for is the other parts of the books, which are, of course, the contributions from the individual projects. So obviously, these are all examples of projects that are successful, that got nominated and in many cases won. And so just look for inspiration from those. You know, what was it about those projects, at least at that time, that was new, that stood out, that juries would say, oh, this is something different that gets my attention.
Thank you, Dr. Allison. And Dr. Krushensky mentioned an anecdote from the BCI Awards, and I'm sure there were many anecdotes and interesting stories that were happening over these years that BCI Award was being awarded. Maybe some of you can think about some anecdotes or funny, interesting stories that are related to it. For example, what comes to my mind, even the prize for BCI Award, maybe Dr. Gugger can tell more about that, the knife that actually has an EEG activity shape on it. So, Dr. Gugger, would you like to start?
Of course. So winners are getting the Gerd Furchelen knife. So the blade is actually handmade. So the knife itself is coming from Solingen. That's the most traditional knife maker in Germany, which is existing for a couple of hundred years. So everything is handmade. And the cutting is actually done in Vorarlberg, that's a district in Austria, by hand, and it contains an event-related desynchronization signal while a person is actually cutting bread. So you can see the alpha activity, and while the person is moving the hand to cut the bread, the alpha disappears, and that's actually the event-related desynchronization, and this also explains the name of the knife, Gerd Furchelen, because this is the principle that Gerd Furchelen came up. And beside that, winners are also getting cash money, and they are invited to contribute with a chapter to a Springer book. This is also very nice. Over the years, the book was sold more than 300,000 times by Springer. So at the beginning, we thought we might, you know, sell 50 issues per year, but we are already over 300,000 books. So this is pretty something for a BCI research book. And nowadays, they're also invited to a podcast by Milena Korostenskaya, which is even better. So they're interviewed and then they can tell their story about their research, about their life. And this, of course, also fascinating for many other people to hear how their career developed. So thank you very much, Milena, for doing this.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Gugger. It's my great pleasure. And thank you for doing this project together. I'm very excited about it and very excited to bring to our listeners all this amazing information and amazing people who can share their stories about BCI and their career development. So thank you, Dr. Krushensky.
So I only, as I mentioned, served on one jury in 2010, and it's been such a long time that I can't remember anything specifically funny about that. But I don't know if amused is the right word, but the winners always announce in conjunction with a conference, oftentimes the international BCI meeting, and you know, towards the end or the closing ceremony. And there's always a lot of anticipation because especially these days, I mean, the award is quite prestigious. And I think oftentimes those events are more well attended than they normally would be because the winner is going to be announced. And it's a kind of a very exciting moment for the nominees and especially the winners.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gugger.
Mm-hmm. So I have just a funny fact about the jury. So we are inviting every year some of the smartest people in the BCI research field. So we have a lot of professors, PhD students, and they know really what they are doing. And they have to score or rank the projects from 1 to 10. So 10 is the best, 1 is the worst. Worst is not really the best word for it, but it goes from 1 to 10. And every single year, at least one of the jury members messes up the score. So they say 1 is the best and 10 is the worst. And this happens just every single year. We already marked it in the rankings sheet, you know, in red color, how it's done. But every single year, somebody is messing it up. And this is just funny with all these experts that we have in the jury.
Yeah, that's funny. Thank you, Dr. Gugger. Dr. Allison, would you like to add something?
Well, I think the example I provided earlier with the time that Tomek won the award is an example of the sorts of happy memories and interesting anecdotes from many of the award ceremonies. So until COVID, of course, the award ceremonies were in person, and I had the honor of being the MC of the award, and Christoph Gugger was there too. And as Dean mentioned, these were often associated with a major BCI event, such as the BCI meeting series, currently organized by the BCI Society. And by the way, the next one will be in June 2023 in Belgium in the Sonian Forest. And I hope to see many of you there. And many of the anecdotes flow from there. So I don't have enough time to go into all of them, but there are a lot of good stories and team building and making friendships where after the awards ceremony, hey, it's the evening. People have already had a very long day and a stressful conference, and they've had to travel. They're ready to go out and relax and have fun, perhaps have a bonfire on the beach or somewhere else. And it would help for that to occur again in the future. So rather than a specific anecdote, it's just a general category of how much I've enjoyed my role with the award ceremonies and interacting with the winners and nominees and attendees.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Allison. And Dr. Rutkowski?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have many stories. I think, you know, Christoph mentioned this, you know, jury to messing up the scores. I think I was one of them. It's a very difficult thing. But also maybe from my also personal story, when we won the award, long time ago, now there is a knife. Knife is very safe, very strong. But long in old days, the award was kind of beautiful chameleon structure, like, you know. And I remember when we won the award, Christoph told me, okay, I will send you this chameleon to your laboratory because it's very delicate, so you will break it, like, you know. And when the chameleon arrived in our laboratory, we opened the box, and first thing, we squeeze it, and we broke it. So basically, it had a very kind of delicate, like, you know, nice long tail. Luckily, we could glue it together, like, you know, but the first thing, when we got it, we broke the award, like, you know.
Yeah, that's right. So it came to you safe, yes.
Sorry. But this fix is really fixed. I can show you on the picture. It's in my other house, like, you know. So
you never told me coming.
Okay. Okay, so thank you so much for all this funny and interesting information. And my next question is about doing the impossible, because the name of our podcast is actually NeuroCareers Doing the Impossible. So my question is, what is one thing that you thought is impossible in your research or in your career that you made possible? And what is your advice of how to make impossible possible? Dr. Guger.
Yeah, I always suggest just to do it and not wait for too many negative comments, because if you're asking around how this is done and if it's possible, then everybody will tell you first the negative parts of the story. And at the end, somebody has to do the work. So just plan it, do the work yourself, so to get all the knowledge, bring the people into the team that you need. Then it will also be successful. If you're waiting for others to do the work for you, nothing will happen. That's just very important. So bring people together. You have the knowledge and then push it forward and you will be able to achieve something.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Guger. Dr. Korshensky?
Yeah, just building on what Christoph said. One, find something you're passionate about. Work hard. And because BCI is such a diverse field, team building is important. So you can't be an expert in everything. So find what you're passionate about and build the team, make connections, network, and work hard. Everyone I know that's taken that approach is successful. And I think including everyone in this current call. So it sounds easier than it actually is, but I think regardless of the field, that's kind of one way to become successful.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Krushensky. Dr. Rutkowski, maybe you can even mention something that wasn't possible for you and then it became possible. And of course, your advice.
So maybe one story also, I used to run BCI laboratory at the computer science department. So all my colleagues, first of all, were telling, no chance, you will not get students because they will be too afraid to do it, But I was always explaining, BCI, it's a very big field. You can find your small niche, Some students like to do multimedia. You can do multimedia, create the stimuli. Somebody will help you with the machine learning and the electrodes. Other students like hardware, but they're really afraid of the machine learning and all the other things. So it's really important BCI gives this opportunity to really contribute in many, many small areas, It's beautiful because we start from the brain, signal processing, acquisition, all the processing, when we have stimuli. So it's really important to be motivated, find your small field that you can contribute, and you will find others around you who will help you, and you build the whole system together. So you can see, these days, like submissions for the BCI Awards are big groups because everybody's contributing. But having your small, perfect contribution, it's really fantastic. And that's what we need. We need these kind of small changes.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think it's a wonderful suggestion to find your uniqueness. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rutkowski.
And doesn't have to be big. Small, the contribution is also very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Small and unique, so that will really stand out from everything else. Yeah. Dr. Allison?
Well, I would certainly agree with what others have said, and the importance of working with other people from different disciplines and with different experiences is so important that you find it in the abstract of Walpaugh et al. 2002. So this is the famous review article. It has been cited far more than any other publication in the entire BCI field. And you see in the abstract that there's a quote that says, future progress hinges on recognition that BCI research is a multidisciplinary endeavor, and he lists several disciplines, neuroscience, psychology, medicine, and certainly engineering. And if you look at my papers and my career, like many of us, a lot of them, if you just look at the author list, you'll say, okay, there's a lot of expertise here that Brendan doesn't have. So, in papers with, for example, with Dean or with Christoph, they have engineering skill and signal processing knowledge that I don't at all. And some other recent work with, for example, Dr. Spitato or the group from Liège, I'm working with medical doctors who are also neurologists. I don't have that medical background. And so there's really no way I could have done what I have been doing or what I plan to continue doing without a good team.
Yeah, thank you so much. And Dr. Guger, maybe you can share your personal story of what seemed to be impossible at the beginning, but then became possible because you used your own advice, just doing things and really not trying to get any feedback, which at the beginning can be negative. Yes?
Maybe I take the brain computer interface stroke rehabilitation story again. So like 10 years ago, we started to work with many hospitals to test our brain-computer interface for upper limb treatment of stroke patients, chronic stroke patients. And then it was really difficult to bring the system into hospitals because they're always busy. So they don't have extra time and extra team members for new and extra technology. And then we started to run actually our own rehabilitation centers. They are located actually in our GTEC locations, for example, here in Austria, but also in Barcelona and so on. And then patients were just visiting our own facilities, and this allowed us to do these studies much, much faster with our own speed. So we recruited our own physiotherapists, occupational therapists, and also nurses. And they are now treating patients very effectively. And we just had the time to do it. And in this way, we could show that our BCI treatment is effective, safe, and we got also medical approval for that. And just in the small village where I'm sitting, so we have 1,000 people living here, we treated already 30,000 recovery sessions here, which is actually a lot over the last years. And this is surprising that we were able to achieve that in this small village, with independent from hospitals and rehabilitation centers.
Yes, that was so amazing. I was so impressed seeing how to the small village on the outskirts where people are brought from all over and they're coming and the cars are bringing them for BCI sessions. I think at the beginning, someone might think, no, how is that possible at all to bring people here? But with a certain mindset and perspective, you were able to develop all this system of people coming to your place and being brought from all over the country and from many other places. So very impressive, very impressive. Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Guger. Dr. Krushensky, maybe you can share your story, maybe from your speech detection project or any other project that, you know, seemed to be impossible at the beginning, but you made them possible.
Yeah, as I mentioned, when I first entered the BCI field as a postdoc, I was shocked about how noisy and complex the signals were. And, you know, I thought it was getting in over my head. At that point, I was unsure of how I can take these really noisy signals and do anything with them. And then, you know, within a year or so, we had the P300 Speller successfully working. You know, at that time, it was a pretty good information transfer rate, but also moving towards something that's a higher information transfer rate and more transparent to the patient. We started working on the speech decoding, which I also was skeptical about early on. And then, you know, roughly in a little over a 10-year period from when we worked on the P300 Speller to when we were doing the speech decoding and synthesis, we were able to generate intelligible speech from intracranial activity. And that was the work of Christian Herf and Miguel Engerich from Tanya Schultz's lab. And I never thought that would have been possible in the early days. And I'm still quite surprised on how intelligible we can make the speech. But as I mentioned before, we're still not anywhere near providing something practical to an end user. But we're making slow progress on that. So when I say intelligible, we can, in certain scenarios, generate intelligible speech, but that's largely trained off of actual speech. So we're still plugging away at getting that to work with imagined speech and then all of the subsequent efforts to make that more practical so that we can eventually provide that technology to a disabled individual.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Krushensky. And now as we're starting to wrap up today's podcast, I would like to ask you to provide your career advice for our listeners, especially to those who are considering their careers in neuroscience or specifically in neurotechnologies? What can help them build that successful career? Dr. Guger?
Yeah, I always advise people to go abroad. So you also have to study at another university, not only at your home university, so that you see something different. And further away is actually better, so that you can meet new people and they give you new connections. We are running nowadays also the Brain Computer Interface Hackathons, so they're a very nice chance to meet other people. That's an event happening normally on Saturday and Sunday. And in the last one, we had hundreds of people inside, and then we put students, developers, makers, neuroscientists, and neurosurgeons into teams. Then you can interact with them, you can develop new BCI applications, and then you become friends with people from all around the world. So you can meet your future supervisor, or you meet somebody from a company where you can do an internship, or your master thesis, your PhD thesis. So the networking is very important. And at the end of the hackathon, all these people are normally friends. And this gives you a lot of opportunities to exchange knowledge and visit other places. And another very nice opportunity is the BCI and Neurotechnology Spring School. That's just happening in April again. So last year we had more than 5,000 people participating from 107 countries. And that's also a very nice opportunity to meet supervisors, because we invited more or less 120 experts to give keynote speeches about their research projects. Then you can see the whole world of neurotechnology, and you can just figure out what you like most: P300 spellers or implanted spike analysis devices, whatever you like. And then you can just look around who is offering a corresponding topic for your career.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Guger. And I think Dr. Guger is a perfect example of what he was suggesting, to really go to other places, meet people, collaborate, because Dr. Guger's company has representations in many places of the world. He has collaborations with people from various different countries, and also his team is also very international. So that also always inspires me when I see that in Dr. Guger's company, and the way he also communicates with other people from various places around the world. So thank you, Dr. Guger. Dr. Krushensky?
Yeah, I would say I'll specifically maybe talk more from the student's perspective, graduate student perspective, and as well undergrad, maybe to a certain extent postdocs. So I'd just say read a lot of papers. Find what you're interested in, read a lot of papers, because I get contacted by prospective students all the time, and that are interested in our research and BCI in general. But you know, a portion of them just think it's a cool concept but don't know anything about it, which is okay. And you know, I'm also fine that to bring on a certain number of students that, you know, just want to learn from scratch. But what really catches my attention is when students contact me and are asking me specific questions about, you know, our papers or other papers in the field, which shows that they've kind of done their homework. Now, obviously, I think once you make it to the postdoc stage, students have already successfully done that. But it's still something similar. If you're transitioning to a postdoc, or you know, trying to transition to a faculty position, you need to get familiar with either the mentor's research or what's going on at the institution, what you can provide to the institution. You know, if you're looking for a faculty position, to make yourself more competitive or get the institution or advisor's attention.
Yeah, absolutely. This is an excellent advice. And this is what I also advise students who come and ask me about their applications to different institutions. I advise them always to get familiar with what the lab does, what publications are, and it helps them to become better specialists in the field, or prepare themselves to the field and expand their knowledge about various things that are being done in the field, especially if they are trying to apply to several different institutions. So they are learning about each of them and about the research that is done in each of those institutions and already becoming better specialists, just preparing application, yes, for the position. So it's really, really important. Thank you very much, Dr. Krushensky, Dr. Rutkowski.
Yeah, maybe also I would very much agree that reading a lot is super important because creativity comes from knowledge. Like, you know, we have to have some background knowledge to create new things, and this is super important. But I think it's also important to find joy. Somebody should find, like, you know, the small piece that would really bring joy, like, you know, because this will make you, like, you know, wake up in the morning and do the thing, like, you know. In research, there are many negative results, there are many bad things happening, but you have to find this kind of niche that you really enjoy. And I think, like, you know, in Christoph's company, they're always so happy. So I guess they enjoy what they do, like, you know, and this is maybe the idea of the success. And maybe, like, you know, also maybe it would be very useful these days to have some programming skills because there is so much code available. If somebody wants to try something, and even you can try to see this is interesting. So it's good to have little programming skills because this is really always, like, you know, helpful for the next step.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's great advice. And many of our speakers of our podcast are emphasizing the importance of interest in what they do, because this is what keeps you going, keeps you be motivated even through some challenging times and succeed. And programming skills, some people might find it at the beginning intimidating. However, those who persevered and just went through that threshold when they didn't feel comfortable, they actually start to enjoy programming. And some of them are even giving me this feedback and they're saying, now I cannot stop. I'm not doing other things. I'm not programming. So it's really just the most important to get started, to get over that first threshold. And then it comes very enjoyable to many, many of people. So thank you for this advice, Dr. Rutkowski. And now Dr. Allison.
So I would agree with what has been said so far. In my career, I also spent a lot of time working in different labs, working abroad. In fact, I worked in Dean Krasiensky's group almost 10 years ago, and then I worked at Christoph's group a couple of years after that. Before then, I was in Bremen, which was mentioned, and in TU Graz, and you know, different places, Walpaw Lab, Furtscheller, was a great guy to work for. And I would not have been the person I am today otherwise. So consistent with that and with what other people are saying is, you know, since you have to find what's fun for you, you're more likely to find that if you have a range of different experiences. If you just stay with one lab and with one advisor and one approach, it might be that, you know, you have what Tomek is saying you want to avoid. It might be you start waking up and you think, oh, I'm not that interested. This isn't very exciting. I'm just doing this because I've been stuck in this one university for a while. And maybe if you had just gone to work in some other lab, perhaps in Tomek's lab or with anyone here, you would have found something that was better for you, that was more of a fit. And also you would have met more people. So you know, this applies more at the graduate level, but not exclusively. If you have a chance to go and work in a different group, a lot of undergrad universities will have some kind of a lab rotation or an opportunity to apprentice yourself in another in a professor's department, and you're sort of like a junior version of a grad student working in the lab. I would recommend this range of different experiences.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Allison. And as we are already finishing our today's podcast, if any of you have some final words to our listeners, any encouragement for their BCI Award submission or anything else you would like to say, Dr. Guger.
Yeah, I just highly recommend to submit something to the BCI Award, and ideally you're making it to the nominees or even to the winners. And nowadays I see the certificate very often on LinkedIn or also in the CV. And this is just a very important contribution for me, because if I see that somebody was nominated or even winning the BCI Award, I know that he has a lot of knowledge. This makes a huge difference to somebody who has a CV with no BCI experience So I highly recommend to participate because it really helps in your career to show that you were one of the nominees or winners.
And thank you, Dr. Guger. Dr. Rutkowski.
Yeah, because maybe if I can add to Christoph's comment, because my students quite often, they never work in the BCI. They graduated from university. They went to big companies, IBM and so on. But many of those big, like, you know, corporations, they really appreciate. They had some BCI experience, BCI nomination, BCI, like, you know, winning in this head's award. So it's really important, like, you know, to show that you stand out. And BCI is the technology that really still stands out, like, you know, it's very modern. So it's very good idea to submit. It's very good practice. You have to write these 2 pages, like, in a report. So it's also quite nice, like, you know, step forward, like, you know, in this area.
Yeah, absolutely. Even to summarize your study in these 2 pages, it's already giving you a new perspective on what you do. Yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Rutkowski. Dr. Krushensky, would you like to say anything?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say work hard, work on something that's useful, and I think foremost, have integrity. And if you do that, you know, you'll be competitive for BCI awards, you'll be competitive for PhD, postdoc, faculty positions. So don't focus on the other things, just find something you're interested in. And ideally, what you're interested in would be something worthwhile. And if you work hard at it, but again, integrity, because to be quite honest, there's a lot of work out there that doesn't have integrity, that's not very useful. But the work that rises to the top for instance, the BCI award and so forth, is the work that has integrity.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's very important that you mentioned that. Thank you. And Dr. Allison?
Thank you. And yeah, I once again, I agree with what the others have said, but I wanted to extend a bit of what Dean was just saying. Integrity does stand out. I mean, we're just telling stories about how we've known each other for a long time, and none of us would be saying this without strong mutual respect and appreciation of the trustworthiness and honor of other people. Another quick final comment is to extend a lot of what has been said to people with BCI businesses. So if you have a company and you're trying to produce BCIs, you know, whether for patients or not, your integrity is going to be under a microscope. And unfortunately, there have been a lot of failures of this. So, you know, we can go into a lot of examples of companies or practitioners or products that are not ethical in some way or another. They don't deliver what they claim to and such. And this is a growing concern for the field, especially with the so-called big BCI that I mentioned earlier on, that people like us and podcasts like these can easily be drowned out by much, much larger spending efforts and larger groups. And there is, unfortunately, some potential profit. And I use a different B word elsewhere, but I'll just call them baloney BCIs here. And so, you know, watch out for that. If you're whether you're a student or a patient or a user, you know, there is a possibility, just because something has a slick marketing campaign behind it, that it might not be a good system, or that the person might not be qualified. So extending what Dean was saying, go out there with integrity, do what is right, and it will stand out in the long term. And maybe someday you too can be on a podcast led by Milena.
Thank you so much, Dr. Allison. I would like to thank every one of you for this amazing, inspirational, and insightful stories and this amazing podcast. I wish all of you all the best possible success in all your projects. And we are looking forward to the podcast series of BCI Award Series, where we will hear from the nominees and the winners of BCI Award. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And good night from Tokyo.
Thank you. Good morning from Mexico.
You're the best, Milena. Very good.
Are you a fearless pioneer in the world of brain-computer interfaces? Do you have an amazing project that's pushing the boundaries of what's possible? Then we want to hear from you. The International BCI Award is one of the biggest and most prestigious awards in the BCI world, and the deadline for submission is September 1st. But don't worry, you don't need a top-notch budget or equipment to be a nominee or a winner. All it takes is a great idea and the determination to make the impossible possible. So, submit your project now at bci-award.com. Find the link in our podcast notes and join us on this incredible journey to explore the world of BCIs. And make sure to listen to our upcoming BCI Award NeuroCareers podcast series for tips and tricks on creating a successful submission. Who knows? You might be the next nominee or winner of the International BCI Award and proudly showcase your nomination on your resume to impress potential employers and establish a successful career in neurotechnologies. But don't stop there. If you're looking for more guidance on succeeding in neurocareers, book a free consultation with me, your podcast host, Dr. K, at the Institute of Neuro Approaches. So, what are you waiting for? Let's make the impossible possible together.